Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. They're everywhere. What am I talking about? I'm talking about ticks and tick disease. It's true. You can live in Chicago, visit Lincoln Park, and never, ever go to someone's farm or a forest or anything like that, and you come back and your dog has a tick or two or three. Yeah, even in Chicago. And most certainly, if you go up to Wisconsin for a weekend or to Michigan, or you're walking in the forest preserve somewhere way out in the suburbs, north, south, it doesn't matter. Ticks are out there. What you can do to prevent ticks and the disease they bring with them, we'll talk with Becky Mosser about that. Emily Clem is an old friend, CEO of the South Suburban Humane Society. So, Emily, I need your help. Help!
Hi, Steve. I'm happy to help. I'm here for you.
Okay, so help. Because I go online and I read a story, then I read another story and another story. National media saying in communities all over the country, people who purchased a dog or cat during the pandemic are now simply tired of their animals. They're giving them up. They're being irresponsible. What is your experience? It's not my experience. That's not the case. But you tell me what's happening where you're located at South Suburban Humane.
It's not our experience either, and the stories have been really frustrating because it's something that the public has really latched onto as this idea. You know, it's really pervasive across social media, shame on these people for giving up their pandemic puppies, and it's simply not what we have experienced at the South Suburban Humane Society, nor any of my colleagues across Chicagoland whom I'm in regular contact with. So our intake is high, but it's not people who adopted and, you know, have gone back to their regular lives and have given the dog up. It's economic reasons, it's housing reasons, it's, you know, kittens, unfortunately, with spay-neuter being shut down for so long in 2020, we're seeing a huge influx of kittens who, you know, unfortunately, outside cats weren't fixed at the same rate in 2020 that they are normally.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been doing anything we can actively do to dispel that story. And it's very interesting because we recently made a post about how full we were, and I got a contact from a local media outlet who asked if it was pandemic puppies. And when I said no, then they weren't interested in running the story.
So, oh, my colleague, shame on you.
I don't know why it's a story that people want to cover when it's not true. You know, the original story came from the BBC. It came from the UK. And quoted someone in the UK, and maybe that is exactly what they're experiencing there, but it's just not what we are experiencing here.
Have you heard, so you said, because I know you're involved with the Shelter Association, you talk mm-hmm. to colleagues in the Chicago area all the time, but you talk to shelters around the country. I have not heard, as do I, and I have not heard that this is a problem anywhere, from California to North Carolina, from Minnesota to Texas, and everywhere in between. Yes, for a variety of reasons, which we'll talk about, there has been an increase of animals coming into the shelter. And you mentioned some of those reasons, but it has nothing to do with the so-called, it's really fiction, about people just getting bored with their animals or whatever, mm-hmm. these pandemic puppies. Have you found that anywhere in the country?
No. So every Friday, I'm fortunate to sit on this national shelter leadership call. There's people from what you just said, Texas to California, even to Canada and New York, and no one has experienced it. In fact, New York shelters have been actively trying to put out counter articles, which the New York Times did run a counter article that, you know, it's not true that pandemic dogs are getting returned. So, you know, we've all been trying to dispel that as best we can because I have not heard one colleague say that that's true.
Now,
our intake, like I said, everyone's intake across the country is high, mm-hmm. but it's not that.
All right, so let's talk about what it is. You explained the kitten season sort of thing, and it's kitten season anyway. So there are, mm-hmm. at this time of year, lots of kittens, unfortunately, that most shelters have. That's been exacerbated, as you explained, because trap, neuter, vaccinate, return. on these young kittens wasn't done in 2020. So that part you explained. I want to talk about the housing issue a little bit.
Yes.
So every year shelters do get, that's what you're there for. You do mm-hmm. get animals that come in and try to deal with these problems so the animals don't have to come in. But one of them happens to be, and it's a combination of issues, I suspect, economics related to housing, related to difficult to find housing if you happen to have a pet. Does that explain in part what's happening not only to you, but all over the country?
Absolutely. That's a big part of it. Moving and unable to find housing that accepts their specific pet has always been a challenge. And I think that the pandemic has exacerbated that issue and made it even worse. We have all been, as shelter leadership, we have all been so afraid of the eviction moratorium and, the ending of the eviction moratorium, which is happening now. This month is when evictions can resume. We have already seen some evictions happening and have been taking in some of those pets. So it's an issue that I think is going to continue to get worse as 2021 progresses and into 2022. I've often said, Steve, that I feel like animal shelters are the canary in the coal mine of economic indicators, mm-hmm. because whenever our intake increases dramatically, then things happen badly with our national economy. It happened in 2008. Yeah. Our intake started increasing steadily, more people giving up their pets for economic reasons, and then, we went into a recession. And I don't want to be a doom and gloom person, but just given what I'm seeing, I'm very concerned about the next couple of years, the next 18 months to 2 years.
Well, if you're in a position to adopt, South Suburban Humane's website is what?
SouthSuburbanHumane.org.
Which is easy enough to remember. You're in Chicago Heights. You're now open, I assume, for people to come in. What is your address?
1103 West End Avenue in Chicago Heights.
But that's your address right now. So in our 2 minutes left, you're working on something really exciting.
We are building a new animal shelter, and it is hugely exciting. We are moving our shelter and clinics to Madison. It's going to be right off of I-57 and Lincoln Highway, so super easy for anyone across Chicagoland to find. The building will be 19,000 square feet. It will have our shelter and our low-cost veterinary services clinic, as well as our low-cost spay-neuter clinic. So it's really going to be a one-stop shop for people who have needs with their pets and want to adopt. We're on this beautiful piece of land that is surrounded by wetland nature preserve, so
wow.
that people can go for walks with the dog that they want to adopt.
Hmm.
Volunteers can hang out in this beautiful setting. So it's very different than our current setting along the railroad tracks where we are.
Yeah.
And we really believe this is going to be just a huge benefit to all pets and the people who love them across the Southland.
Well, and there's a need. There aren't, unfortunately, too many shelters where you're at that are responsible at what they do. And not only that, you're a leader not only in the Chicago area but in the country. Emily, it is always good to talk to you. One more time, at southsuburban.org, correct?
Southsuburbanhumane.org.
I got that wrong. South Suburban.
That's okay.
But then I get to repeat it. So
that's
it's
right.
southsuburbanhumane.org. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate you.
I often wonder about this, how some people are just salivate when they talk about tick disease. We're going to talk about tick disease. It's a topic that, Becky Mosser, registered veterinary technician, gets really excited about. Why do you get so excited, Becky, about ticks and tick disease when most people say, yuck?
Well, I think that's how we end up in veterinary medicine, is the things that make people say yuck are intriguing to us. But tick disease, I'm passionate about because it is a lifelong preventable disease. There's no reason for our pets to suffer from the diseases that are carried by ticks when we can prevent tick bites.
All right, so that's the headline right there. We can prevent. I have said, this has been my line, and you tell me if I'm right, that we could do a better job at protecting our pets than we can ourselves from tick disease. Do you buy into that?
Oh, 100%. It's really funny. I think most of my drug reps have said, you know, everyone they work with at some point in time has said they wish they could take a preventative or wear a tick collar and it'd be effective when they're out walking in woods or out in, you know, dry areas.
Well, let's dispel a myth, first of all. Two myths. That one would be, okay, so what? A tick bites my dog. Probably a tick has bitten my dog over and over and over, and there's been no issue. What do you say to that?
Well, tick-borne diseases are funny that way because, you know, so first of all, not all every single tick will carry some type of disease. But the bigger problem is that any one tick can carry multiple diseases. So it's kind of a just sort of a risk-cost-benefit when you're thinking about, you know, exposure to ticks. But, you know, being bit by a tick doesn't guarantee a disease, but exposure to a disease guarantees, pretty uncomfortable symptoms. And again, these are lifelong diseases. So it's sort of like a, is it worth it? You're sort of playing a Russian roulette with ticks.
All right. So that's one thing. And then the other is, well, you know, I'd rather go to the local pet store, go online and get something all natural, because I do believe that the products, these veterinary products, are going to cause all sorts of side effects. You must hear that all the time, so I want you to comment on that.
Yeah, I do hear that a lot. And what I can say is I can only look at the science, and I don't have science that backs up the efficacy of natural products against transmission of diseases when it comes to preventing ticks. So there are things that may be undesirable to ticks, but if the tick does latch on, I don't have science that says it's going to kill the tick in any kind of effective manner. What I do know is that there's a lot of science, tons of science, behind products that are sold from veterinary clinics that are from reputable pharmacies that, can have side effects and do have warnings and cautions, and you absolutely need to talk about that with your veterinarian because all things have some risk. But again, no protection is all risk.
Well, right. And tick disease is no fun, and that's what I want to talk about. You mentioned something in passing, excuse me, and I think that's very, very important that, and these are my words, not yours, that very often, and we didn't even realize how often, but very often, if I'm saying that strongly enough, most of the time, when a tick transmits a disease, turns out it's a cocktail. And it's not only one disease, it's more than one disease. And that is not only really gross, but that can affect a pet for a lifetime and not in a very good way.
Oh, absolutely. And that's sort of what I get on a soapbox about is these are lifelong preventable diseases. And so, you know, what I find when I lecture about tick-borne diseases is almost everyone knows someone who is affected by Lyme disease. And so when I ask them what the quality of life is of someone who has Lyme disease, there's never anything positive. You know, they talk about how febrile they become, how weak they become, how sore and the poor quality of life, people who have had to quit their jobs. And we have no reason to think that our pets feel any differently when they're going through a spell or an inflammation process related to Lyme disease at the time. So, and that's just one of the conditions. So we really need to think about the quality of life for our pets. And again, if we have something that we can prevent that they would be affected by their entire life, that we can't get rid of, like we can only treat the symptoms, I would want to do everything I could to keep my pets from a lifelong disease.
All right. So the question now is, how do you do that? So let's focus a bit on Lyme, only because that's the most common, and there are more, quote, solutions to prevent Lyme. And I'm talking about the fact that we have for dogs and we don't for us, a vaccine.
Yeah. A really effective vaccine, too. And it's funny because there gets, you know, to be a lot of kind of myths and misnomers around a lot of vaccines, right? Vaccines in general, especially now. But this vaccine, again, very safe, highly, highly tested for safety and efficacy. And it's just a vaccine. It's just a quick injection that will prevent the infection of Lyme disease if your pet is exposed. And that is pretty phenomenal when you think about numbers like 1 in 3 dogs being affected by Lyme disease in the upper northeast United States.
Now, there are other things we can do as well. There are other preventives, which ultimately talk to your veterinarian about. We're running out of time here, but can you tell me quickly about that?
Yeah, there's topical preventatives, there's oral preventatives, and then there's, of course, environmental preventatives. And so knowing how to prevent ticks in the environment and being really well-versed on doing tick checks is essential. These tick-transmitted diseases can be transmitted very quickly, and so the most effective thing you can do is get the ticks off as soon as possible. So talk to your vet about how to do that right.
So some preventives for dogs taste really, really good. In fact, they're darn delicious. Are they not now, Becky?
Yeah, like I said, my dogs step all over each other for theirs. We, in my household, use HeartGuard and NexGuard, and we find that to be a really effective combination. And again, really easy to give. They love it.
So we're protecting against several things at once then, right?
That's right.
Now, so that's a good thing. Now, I know that you're speaking for the Human-Animal Bond Association, and if you want to hear, because we're just touching on this just a little bit. So if you want to hear Becky more, no, Matt, I screwed up that time. Because this is not going to air until after. Sorry, Becky.
That's okay.
I know you're also involved with the Human-Animal Bond Association. That's the Human-Animal Bond Association, HABA, HABA.net, where, in fact, you can learn more about Becky. I assume if this thing called the Human-Animal Bond didn't exist, you and I wouldn't even be having this conversation now, right?
Yeah, no, I think so. The Human-Animal Bond is the center of pretty much anyone who is affected or touched by the life of an animal or touches the life of an animal. And there are thousands, millions of people who fall under that category. And it's important to honor that and to educate on that as we learn and grow in the human and animal world.
So that's Human-Animal Bond Association, HABA.net. Becky Mosser, superstar registered veterinary technician. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks for the 101 on ticks and tick disease.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to talk to you about this one dog trainer who recently visited, I believe, somewhere in the Chicago area, and is touring, quote-unquote, around the country in different cities. And here's what you do. You sign up to have a class, I think it's a weekend class with your dog, and with this trainer. And you go online to do it. You pay $600, $800, $1,000. I don't know. I really don't know how much money it is. And until you pay the money and the credit card goes through, you don't learn exactly what the location of this class is. Why doesn't he divulge the location of where this is? In part, it's because he doesn't want law enforcement potentially to show up. He doesn't want the media to show up. He doesn't want protesters to show up. Isn't this a red flag about the trainer? I don't understand how people can go to trainers like this. Please explain it to me, because I really don't comprehend how a trainer who uses a beach towel, rolls it up, puts a rubber band or two around it, and throws it at the dog, called bonking dogs or something like that. How is that possibly acceptable? Oh, listen, I understand, I know, and I've been there. You know, sometimes it's exceedingly frustrating. You have a dog that has a serious behavior problem, and maybe whoever you've reached out to hasn't helped, but in any which case, you're desperate. But I am telling you with absolute confidence, if you're in the Chicago area, for example, we have a veterinary behaviorist. We have a veterinary behaviorist who's in the process of becoming a veterinary behaviorist, a matter of months, I think, and she's a veterinary behaviorist, top of the line. We have certified animal behavior consultants, and we have dog trainers, even, who can work with behavior issues with dogs. It's Chicago, the Chicago area. So there are lots of resources. Why go to a person that does this, uses electronic collars routinely on dogs? I never think that's excusable, but routinely? Come on. I mean, please. And by the way, there's a reason why PetSmart said no more. We're not selling these collars anymore. Please do consider whoever you go to for dog training and the methods that that person uses. Much more next week on Steve Dale's Pet World, bright and early, right here on WGN.